Welcome back to episode 9 of the Bounce Back Bogey podcast. This week, we are talking about the Arnold Palmer Invitational, absolute dominance by Scottie Scheffler, potential scandal from Wyndham Clark. The fact that some smaller field events are getting into the tour more and more, is that a good thing for fans? Mike Weir saying there are no LIV guys at the President's Cup, and a new season of Full Swing being out. We also have a special guest today, Adam Rockwood, who is professional hockey player, still a professional hockey player, huge sports fan. And we just talked to him a little bit, get to know him, and it's a beautiful interview. So, Bray, how was your weekend?
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, it was really good. Took my kids swimming, which is, we did this a few weeks ago and it was good, but had a little trouble going underwater, got a little better. But recently, my wife and him have been going to swimming lessons, which is crazy to think of for someone that's 3 months and 4 months old, but it's really paying off because now he seems to just love the water, loves getting dunked underwater and has a good time. So that was good. And then today, just watched some absolute domination by Scottie Scheffler. I know we'll get into that, but yeah, pretty chill weekend.
Lovely. No waterboarding of your kid today?
Nope. Didn't have the Craig full waterboard session this time.
That's too bad.
My favorite pastime, waterboarding children.
Craig, what'd you get up to this weekend?
Yeah, I had a big birthday weekend, so still in my 20s for one more year.
30.
And we went to Cactus just with like a few of us on Friday night, and then it was actually our other buddies. Like, I'm pretty self-aware, and I'm like more of a fringe guy with this group. But I was like still invited out for our other buddy's birthday. Shout out Adam, probably got me that invite. And then we went to this Kobe Steakhouse. And then after we went to the strip club Brandy's, you want to talk about entitled fucking bartenders and servers? This will also be my cancel culture. So at the end, I'm just going to say I canceled this guy. But this fucking guy is the worst I've ever seen. So we walk in, go straight to the bar. My buddy Garrett, he buys a drink. It's $7 for a Bud Light. Pays the guy $7, no tip. All he did was grab a bottle and pop the top, right? So I usually throw a dollar or two, maybe not every time, but once in a while. I think that's very reasonable for what he's doing. I know they're busy and they're helping 50 guys. Anyway, this fucking guy, I go up next, I order two drinks, one for me, one for my buddy. He goes, hey, I hope you tip better than your buddy because he's not getting another drink from me the whole night. And he puts his receipt in front of me and I look at it. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Did he really just say that? And I had already tipped him like his $2 or his dollar or whatever. The next time I go back to him, I tip him 1 cent. he looks at the receipt and he pulled like, didn't pull me in, but he comes in close and he's like, I don't know if you think you're funny or if this is some kind of statement or if it was a mistake. But he's like, you're going to get real slow service from me the rest of the night. And I'm like, I look back at him. I'm like, you are the worst at your job anyone has ever been at their job. And then we walked out. And then we went to Greta and that was about it. It was a good
night. Tipping culture is out of control. Like, I hate that. They hand you a beer. Bartenders are different. Like, they do a little bit more. But when they hand you a beer and pop the cap, whatever. But when someone literally spins the iPad around after they made you your sandwich at Subway.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Like, come on now.
I'm not saying like I always tip, even for them. Like, I get it. Like, they do more than just pop the top off the beer. Like, they're making drinks and they're on their feet. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a hard job. But the fact that the minimum option now at most places is 20%. Mm-hmm. And then that guy has the audacity to put a receipt in front of me and be like, what, no tip? It's like, you are a fucking idiot. Like, you are not getting any tips for the rest of the night, you fucking moron. So, yeah, hopefully he has fucking AIDS.
Yeah, I just want to say that I don't consider myself a fringe guy. I was, first of all, not invited out to your birthday dinner. Second.
Friend groups.
I also made a little bit of a joke without even knowing and asked you if you wanted to go to the number 5 with me. And you said, oh, no, I can't. And now I find out that you went to Brandy's.
I was out with a different friend group for my friend's birthday. So I'm not going to leave my friend's birthday to go hang out with my other friend on that night. Second of all, isn't the number five, isn't that like in Coquitlam? Like,
Number five is 2 minutes from Brandy's.
oh, really? I
Yeah.
thought it was a Coquitlam one. All right. Well, my bad.
Mikey, how was your weekend?
It was pretty good. Taught a bunch of lessons, watched actually a lot of the golf. I'm a little bit pissed off because I was playing a round at TPC Sawgrass on one of the sims the other day, or not the other day, yesterday. I was 10 under through 15. And
What?
this is with putting. This is with
Whoa.
putting. So I was 10 under through 15 at Sawgrass. And then 16th, the par five, I hit it to 9 feet. And you know what happens? The sim crashes.
No.
No.
And I do not get to finish my round.
Oh my God. Does that happen often?
No, it happens. There was a bug in it, and we brought in like the tech guy to fix it, and everything was fine for like a month. And then the first time it happened was during this round. I was
No.
choked.
That's so
You
brutal.
just got to start your next round on 15 and hit it to 9 feet again, or
Yeah.
16 on 16.
Yeah. So I was all ready to post. I was already counting my trophies, like get me into the players this coming weekend. Like I was gonna send it into the PGA Tour as my Monday queue, but I guess we're never gonna see what I actually shot. So yeah, that
Six
was tough.
water balls on
Damn.
17.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's get into it. The Arnold Palmer. Let's talk about let's start with Scotty Bray.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about this before. Just putting up GOAT numbers, and GOAT gets thrown around way too liberally now, but he is putting up GOAT numbers tee to green. It is disgusting how well he's been driving the ball and hitting his irons approaches. And then just could not get the ball in the hole. And Rory a few weeks ago said Scotty needs to switch to the mallet. And that might be the thing that keeps Rory out of the winner's circle at majors. Because now that Scotty can putt, maybe it's just a 1 week thing, who could say?
Look
But now
out.
that Scotty could putt, I don't know if anyone can touch him. Like if Rory's on, he's on, sure. But if Scotty's on, Scotty's the guy right now.
Yeah, even if I feel like even if the best players in the world are on, they're still not touching him tee to green. So
No.
if he's putting remotely like well or average, just above average, he's not losing. Yeah.
Dominant. We were talking about this a few weeks ago about how we like to see these guys like kind of dominate their sport and run away. If Scotty has figured this out somewhat and he's a decent putter, he can finish like top. If he finishes top 30 in strokes gained putting, he probably wins every week. I think he was still like 47th this week, right? And he
Yeah.
won by five.
Yeah.
At least on through 3 days, I think that's what I saw. So, yeah, he could go on a tear this year if he keeps that up.
Did
Yeah.
how many majors did each of us have him winning? Was it just one each?
I think we all picked him at some point. I
I don't even
cannot
remember.
remember
I think I
for
took him at the
what.
Masters, maybe.
I might need to revise my answer after seeing the performance that he put on.
Scotty at all four in
Yeah.
Grand Slam.
Craig. He was fifth in strokes gained putting this week. So
Okay,
not
I looked
47.
on Saturday and I thought he was like 30th
His
or
the first the
something,
first 2 days
or
he didn't
fourth.
putt very well, and
Yeah. Okay.
then I think the last
I
two
didn't.
rounds he was like, I think he was 16 for 16 from 15 feet and in or something like that.
Yes,
Yeah.
he putted very well the last day, so that probably threw him up the board. But I promise, through 2 days or 3 days, I was sitting at work and I was looking at all the stats,
Yeah.
and he was down there
You're right.
and
He
still
lost
contending.
a stroke and a half the first day, and then round two gained half a shot, round three gained a shot and a half, round four he gained 3.9 shots putting, which is,
Damn.
I mean, that's not unheard of for putting. Like the rounds you make long putts, you're just naturally gonna
Yeah.
gain a lot of strokes. That's not sustainable, and it doesn't need to be sustainable for him. If he gains one stroke putting, it's curtains for everybody else. He's
Yeah.
so good.
Bray, how did you like the course setup with the firm conditions and the long rough? How was
Yeah, the
yeah.
rough, very long, very tough, like major championship setup at Bay Hill. And I know in the past, guys would skip this event because they don't want to get beat up by Bay Hill. Bay Hill is a tough freaking golf course. Long golf courses with thick rough are not my favorite golf courses to watch with firm greens, because like no laying up is big on this. Good golf shots and bad golf shots always end up in the same, not always. Really good golf shots can get rewarded, but a lot of the time they'll just run through the green, and then you'll have that chip shot that's like a semi flop out of thick rough that you got to get up and down, which is fine. I just prefer, like, Riviera is so much more exciting to me to watch. That being said, I do like when players get beat up by golf courses, and I think Bay Hill provides that sort of entertainment. There were some big numbers on hole 6 this week. Jake Knapp made a 12, big bounce back bogey, shout out to him. I think Tommy Fleetwood had a 10. So the setup as a whole, not my favorite, but in the sense that it brings carnage, I love that.
Yeah,
I like when John Daly had a 16 on that hole one 18, year, or an 18. 18. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of this kind of setup, like week in, week out, but I think it's fun to get it a couple times on the schedule.
For sure. Yeah. I did want to talk about Willie Z. He's back to like flushing the ball again. Because a few years ago, he was a flusher, got hurt, took all of last year off basically with his injury, and then came out first week struggling and has been improving week over week, and he is flushing the ball. So he'll be forced to be reckoned with in the majors this year. And I watched like an in-depth thing on how he changed his swing to take pressure off his lower back, which was really cool, because I knew, like, really skinny guy generating a lot of force, it was going to be hard on his body. And I think like Joaquin Neiman's swing is very
same thing.
He's gonna have some issues as he gets older.
Lots of side bend, right? And that's lots where these guys bend. Jason Day kind of tried to shallow out his swing a little bit and get more depth in his backswing so that he could, like, basically he didn't have to have that, like, they call it lean back or whatever, and that's what causes these guys some of that back issue. And then with Day, the other thing was getting a lot more mobility in his lower body. So he's letting that trail leg extend a bit now. He's not keeping them flexed. Like, yeah, some things that will, like, they all do usually when they have back issues.
Mm-hmm. But the big thing that was holding Willie Z back was obviously the putting, because he's always been a flusher, and now he's got the big, big ass cheating broomstick and seems to be working for him. So good to see, although I hate it.
I think we're just going to keep seeing more and more long putters, and I'm all for it.
No, they changed the rule now. Just get rid of them, please.
How would you make the rule, Craig? Would you put a limit on length? Or
I'd probably limit the height. I don't think we're going to see any 8-foot golfers, so no one needs a 40 plus inch putter. So I it shouldn't be able to be, I don't know, over 42 inches, right?
It's not anchored.
Yep.
Yeah, it doesn't
look so
me
bad
that
though.
Much. Some guys do anchor it too. It's the weirdest rule. Like, no one's ever, Bernard literally cheated, and no one would call him out on it.
With that said, there was a hilarious video that I think No Laying Up posted on Twitter, and it was a Champions Tour guy, I think. And he had a black putter grip, and he was using a long putter, and he was wearing a white shirt. And all you could see was the huge putter, the putter grip, like, had washed off on his shirt because he was anchoring it so much.
you gotta be smarter than that. You gotta wear the same color as your grip. That's like in the NFL. I love the defensive guys that don't, I think the Patriots were notorious for this. Bill Belichick would tell them to wear gloves the same color as their opponent's jersey, so they weren't noticing, like the ref wouldn't see them holding. You got to do that same thing with the putter grip.
Yeah.
Anchor it.
I think both of you saw this and we talked about it a little bit, but there was a clip that came out. I think it was at the end of round 3. Of Willie Z being in the long rough and
Wyndham Clark.
I'm sorry, not Willie Z, Wyndham. Wyndham was using his iron to kind of like pat down the grass behind the ball. And it looks like when you, and if you've played golf, you kind of know that when you do that, the ball kind of oscillates a little bit, and it usually goes back and forth and goes back to its original spot. But it looked like Willie was giving it like pretty good tap in the rough. And I just want to get your guys' take on that video.
So I don't think he cheated, and I don't think he meant to cheat. I don't think the ball moved. I do think the ball moved. I'll say that, but I don't think it oscillated to the point where it's a penalty, like John Rahm a few years ago at the Memorial, where he did get penalized. So I don't think there was any wrongdoing. I don't think there was any intent for there to be any wrongdoing. That said, when the rough is thick like this, and I never play golf courses with this thick of rough. If it is, it's when I'm in like deep fescue type thing. When the rough's thick like this, when you're putting your club behind the ball, there's a good chance it will move or this will happen. So if we're going to continue to see deep rough at events like this, players need to be a lot more careful about this, especially with cameras more prevalent. This didn't used to be a thing where you could see it very close, high def stuff. And it's probably not a great thing for the game. That said, if you're causing the ball to move with your club, it is a bad thing. But I don't think Wyndham cheated. I'll leave it at that. Yeah, Mike, what's your take? I got more thoughts on this after you.
I think my general thoughts are that what he did and what that video showed, if you were to follow around the entire tournament, you would probably see 90 to 95% of guys doing the exact same thing. And I don't think they're doing anything wrong. I think the ball, like if you go drop a ball in the rough, in thick rough, and you put your club behind it and you kind of pat the ground down and then you put a camera on it, it's going to look the same and it's going to look like the ball's moving. It's not actually moving.
Yeah. I think though, like if we're going to continue to have deep rough like this, how much can you, and I don't think he was like padding, you used interesting language there where you said he's patting the ground down behind the ball. And I don't think he's like doing that to improve his lie. He's just doing that as his natural setup, as one does. Totally. Like you put the club down. How many times should you legally be allowed to do that? Like there's not a limit. Like this is kind of a ridiculous argument, but say I take my wedge and I pat the ball or pat the grass down behind the ball 100 times. It's going to be easier for me to get club on ball in thick rough if I do that. And I like change for clubs sure. And I think about it. And that's what Patrick Reed Costas thing from a few years ago happened. I don't even know like what the rule is there, but you can make your lie better by not even cheating, by just setting up to the ball a bunch of times, basically.
I have a proposal that's for tough. The rules of golf.
Yeah, okay, let's hear it.
A club pulling out of the bag is a club played.
Ooh,
so as soon as you take the club out of the bag, like card laid, card played.
Card laid, yeah.
Yeah. So as soon as you take that club, you have to hit that club or it's like a penalty.
I like that.
Could you imagine the drama?
I like that a lot. That's interesting. That also is good for when you're taking relief near a cart path or something where it's like I could hit this club, but then you're really not going to hit that club, but you want to get relief from that slightly longer club. Same kind of thing.
I've used that rule before.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And it's like not cheating. Everybody. You're taking advantage of it, but I like that rule, Craig. I'll throw another one on there. I think so. Jack Nicklaus actually, when he was in the rough, hovered his club because he didn't want it to get stuck on the way back, which is smart because I hate when I start a swing, I can't stop. I'm not Tiger stopping at the top of my backswing. If my motion starts, I'm not stopping. I hate when I get it stuck. So that's really smart. But in thick rough, I feel like you almost should have to hover it because you are improving your lie just by setting your club behind the ball. This will never happen. I know it's not like this is a ridiculous thing, but if we were to play by your ball is in the rough kind of thing, you shouldn't be able to flatten the grass down behind the ball, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't disagree with you. That would just be impossible to enforce.
Yeah. It'll never happen. I agree with you. Yeah.
Let's talk about there's some comments about field size and PGA Tour size for tournaments this week from Rory and from Wyndham. What do you guys think about the smaller field events? I think this week was only about 70 guys or so. If that, Craig, how do you feel about smaller field events?
Hate it. I don't know why we're changing something that's not broken. I don't mind it once in a while. But I think these guys would be for pretty much every event. I think he said being less guys, and I think Wyndham said about 100 tour cards and then you're relegated. Like, there is so much talent out there in the golf world. I don't think there's any reason we can't make a product where you can see more talent and more guys can get paid. The best players have always by far made a lot more money than the guy who's like Tiger made obviously way more than Phil, and Phil made way more than the next guy, right? It's through endorsements. The money's out there. Stop trying to nickel and dime the PGA at all these events and like get more money for yourself. I just think, I don't know. I think golf is going down a dangerous road with that personally.
Right.
Yeah. I kind of like the setup that they have currently, and I know this is contrary to what a lot of people think. I don't mind the small field events because you're almost guaranteed to get a good leaderboard. Good leaderboard meaning guys that you recognize on the leaderboard, not these one-off winners. And the like argument that there's so much talent elsewhere. These aren't closed events like the LIV Tour, where it's kind of like a closed circuit. You can't really lose your spot. You have to earn your way into these events. Like Jake Knapp just won at in Mexico, and that earned him into this event. It earned him into the players. You can win your way on. You can earn your way in by playing some really good golf. So I don't mind the small field. I don't know what that ideal size is. 69. It was 69 players this week, which is kind of ridiculous that they had to
Nice.
send Dunlap out by himself. Dunlap, I don't know. By himself playing as a
Absolutely
single.
bizarre that they wouldn't add in another guy.
Yeah, that's weird. He declined to play with the marker, which is his own choice, but yeah, I don't know what the ideal size is. 70 feels okay for me. I don't know. I think we're just on like a it's a small sample of these events so far. As we get further along into the season, we'll see some better competition in these smaller field events.
I guess what I'm saying is I took issue with his comments in the sense that I don't want to see less tour cards. I'd rather see more tour cards. I think that's just better for the game in general. And then I don't mind like elevated events or like WGCs back in the day or anything like that. But I just don't want every event to be like that. Because then what are you gonna do? Are you gonna shrink the majors too? And we're gonna have 100-person majors and like
Well,
lose that.
Masters is already really small
Masters
field.
is the exception, yeah. Masters gets to do whatever the fuck it wants. It can always work. Like the Masters is awesome, but it's an invitational, right? Versus like a British Open, like do you change that and all the history
No.
there? I don't know.
No, and the majors will always be head and shoulders above every other event. If you expand though to like 200 tour cards, there's only so much daylight that you can fit these tournaments into, especially early season. Like 70 is obviously really small. We didn't need to be this small for the elevated events. But there's already an issue of guys that have tour cards getting starts on tour in other events. So if we expand even further, there'll be a lot of guys that don't get the starts that they want.
So do you think the PGA makes money off what Mike thought the event was this week, the Puerto Rico
Puerto
Open?
Rico.
Do you think they're making money off that event?
Probably not. I don't know.
Really?
It was a good
See,
event, though.
like that's what I wonder. Could they run more if it was a good event though?
More
Could they
opposite
run
field
more
events.
secondary events if they're able to make money off that? And
I'm probably wrong on like if they make money. I'm sure they do. Why not more opposite field events and on the
yeah.
weeks that there's what's it called? Designated.
Yeah.
Sure.
Like I think the more golf we have available to watch, the better, right? Like if LIV was a better product, everyone would want to watch. Like I think we'd have a bunch of good golf tournaments we could watch.
You do get, yeah, I agree. You just, I think, I like where I like the amount of cards there are right now on tour. I don't want it to get to a point where it feels like there's too many cards and it's diluted a little bit.
Yeah, I want to push back on Craig's point where the more golf there is, the better. I think the opposite because right now, with there being LIV and PGA divided, yeah, it's not as good. Like, I want all the best players to play together.
So I've kind of thought about this like a little bit more. I think if LIV was a better product, it would be awesome because they're going to come together at the majors. There's going to be like always drama each year. Like, oh, what's the better tour? I know it's like, it's obviously not great for the PGA tour. And I do see the other side of it. Like, I'm kind of on the fence, mm-hmm, but like, boom, put in a red zone. You get to watch LIV and you get the PGA stream. You get the secondary stream. You could throw the McKenzie tour on there as like the playing through. Get those guys a little exposure. I don't know.
They already need that for... They need that for one event. Like, they already don't show enough golf shots at one goddamn golf tournament. Like, we don't need to be jumping tours with zero context because you don't know what's going on. That would be absolute fucking chaos. I want Craig to be on the call for that, for his red zone across five different tours.
Because this is a golf podcast and we can't go a week without talking about LIV, there was some news that came out that LIV golfers will not be allowed to play in the upcoming President's Cup, which is not good for golf overall. The President's Cup is already usually one-sided and a lot more boring than the Ryder Cup is, and now you are losing guys like Cam Smith, Jacko Niemann, Louis Oosthuizen. I think just overall for golf in general, this is another step backwards. What do you guys think about that?
I don't know what Mike Weir's doing. Yeah, this is not good. I don't know what his agenda is. Like, we already know PGA Tour is likely to get funding from the PIF at some point if they haven't already. So I don't know what his deal is, but it definitely makes his team a lot worse in Montreal this upcoming fall. So I don't know what his objective is. Like you said, Joaquin Niemann is playing some elite, elite golf right now. So to not have him on the President's Cup team is truly ridiculous. And Cam Smith isn't playing his best, but major champion Louis Oosthuizen maybe a little past his prime.
Mike Weir is just trying to get as many Canadians into the event as possible.
I guess so. Yeah, we could see probably three, but up to four if Svensson turns it around here. But yeah,
and already blowout is going to turn into such a bigger blowout. It's crazy decision.
Yeah, to do I want to get into the President's Cup, but it just seems like it's the same thing year after year where. Mm-hmm. It's over after the second set of matches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And President's Cup so Ryder Cup is sick, obviously. Like, we all love the Ryder Cup. President's Cup has a better format, in my opinion. The captains pick like head to head against the other player. Like, the Ryder Cup does a blind draw. If I'm a captain and Craig's a captain for President's Cup, I put up my first pairing and then Craig matches head to head. That's
snake
sick.
Draft kind of.
Yeah, awesome. It's snake draft. And then you put up your guy and then I put up my and it snakes back and forth. Whereas Ryder Cup, you just blindly submit your list and then they get paired up against the blind list. You can kind of guess where they're going to put guys and try to match, but not the same.
I will say about the Ryder Cup, it hasn't worked in the past and it's still not there yet, obviously, especially if he's going to ban guys from LIV. Like, the US has just always been better. But with the Asian countries coming up, I think the President's Cup could be something in a few years. Like, there's going to be a lot of kids that have been bred inside golf lab / sweatshop, just grinding on their swing for 12 hours a day being hit by a stick. So,
Why doesn't women's golf have President's Cup? Like, the Asian women would clean up, I feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe that's
the reason. Why.
Yeah.
One thing I will say, so golf is in kind of a weird place right now. I think we can all agree that the product is not as good as it could be. But one thing that came from the LIV Tour expanding this year was the fact that Full Swing on Netflix came out with a season 2. And for just purely content reasons, I think this season, I watched a little bit of it, is going to be phenomenal. And although it's not good for golf in general, I think just looking at it from a full swing point of view, from the show, it's going to be a spectacle. What do you guys think about that?
I know. I loved this season. I thought it was head and shoulders above the first season. I have a bunch of notes on it. The one thing I didn't like, the only episode that kind of put me to sleep, but at the same time was great for making Zach Johnson look bad, was episode 7. I fucking hate that guy more than I thought. He is so easy not to like. He literally is a fringe guy in his friend group, and his buddies just saw that. Like, JT and Ricky were like, what's this fucking loser always wanting to do hanging around with us? And then this year they're like, hey, JT, like, we got a free pass onto the Ryder Cup this year if we, like, invite this guy to stay with us at a couple majors. JT's yeah. like, fuck yeah, and just, like, drank all year and missed every cut and still made the Ryder Cup team. Like, unbelievable how they just saw the softness in this short midget human being and were able to just buy their way onto the Ryder Cup. So
why the hell was he 7. Why was ZJ staying with them at the British Open?
It almost seemed like illegal.
Yeah,
you know? Like, that's... it seemed like
like, yeah. I can't believe they put that on Netflix. Like, they're obviously, they do some things to create more drama, but they were showing Keegan Bradley in his own hotel room, FaceTiming his kids. Meanwhile, JT's chumming it up with ZJ at the dinner table with Spieth and Ricky. Like, it's just not, that doesn't
seem right.
Such
a bad optic.
Yeah.
Keegan deserved that pick for sure. Like, I don't probably hate Keegan. I don't think Mike likes Keegan, but.
Hate him.
But like, he 100% deserved to be on that team.
I agree.
Some other things I had on Full Swing really quick. Episode 2, not covering Rory being so close at the US Open, I think was a bit of a miss. Like, they kind of covered him, Rory, quite a bit, but then they just like glazed over the US Open. It's like he was right there again, and they didn't even really talk about him there.
Yeah.
Ricky is the man. I got so many notes. Sorry. When I'm winning the US Open is like, it's kind of, it was better than I thought. Although now I was team Wyndham at the beginning of the week. Now, like, I hear some shit about him that he's like, maybe not the nicest guy, I think, or something. The sports psych, like, contrast between him and Joel Damon was awesome. Highlight though of the show, I'll stop here, is Tom Kim at the Masters and working his way through the clubhouse.
Yes.
And he's just like, he's like, has no idea where he's going. And he brings the fucking camera crew into the champions locker room. Unbelievable. That so guy is good. That his episode was, I think, one of my favorites. With the, I like the Fitzpatrick episode too.
Yeah. Tom Kim's funny. That was hilarious. And him falling into the mud at the PGA was great. Yeah. The Fitzpatrick brothers out kicking the shit out of their coverage with their fiance and girlfriend. They are not the prettiest looking dudes with some smoking fiance and girlfriend, so good for them.
Yeah, they got wheels.
Yeah. I'm sure Rom kind of opted out of Netflix like Mercedes and Red Bull did the early seasons of Drive to Survive, which is fine, but they didn't show like sure, you don't need to get interviews and voice clips from him, but they didn't show any of his shots at the Masters other than his winning putt.
That was the weirdest thing for me. So I only watched the first two episodes, and I was like, I remember like how badly Rory played, and I was like trying to think in my head, I was like, who won? And I was like, oh, Rom won. And they showed absolutely nothing until they showed his winning putt.
I know. And so I know it's not part of the season they were covering, but he went to live at the start of this year. Like, I'm sure they could have addressed that a little bit. Like, they did a big PGA versus LIV, and then episode 2 was the merger talk. The Masters episode, it was like PGA versus LIV, showed how well Brooks did, and Phil Mickelson was right there, obviously, and like didn't touch about Rom at all, who was on the PGA at the time and now is on LIV. I thought that was just really, really weird. Overall, I thought this season, like Craig said, so much better than last season. Although last season, a lot of non-golf fans really liked it. So I think similar to Drive to Survive for F1, it got a lot of people into the game. But I think this season was a lot better for like more hardcore golf fans.
I think it still did a really good job though of bringing people in. Like I think they what they do is they make it like a soap opera drama, right? So I think that's really good for getting eyes on the game.
If you were to rate season 1 and season 2 out of 10, what would you give them?
Season 1, like for my own viewing,
yeah,
say season 1, 4, and then this one like 7.5.
Yeah, okay. I would go a little higher with this season, and I would like season 1 for me was like a 5. Like it was cool. I was like finally a show on golf. But they just kind of missed the mark a little bit. And then this season I was so into the, like I said, the only episode I didn't love was 7. So I'd give it 8.5 this season.
Lovely.
What about you, Mike?
Right, Bray, you had some thoughts. What were you going to say?
Give me your ranking first.
Like I said, I've only watched a couple of episodes of this year, from what I saw, I'd give it about a 8.5. And season one, I couldn't, like, it was cool, like Craig said, finally seeing a golf show and seeing some guys that I kind of liked on it, but it wasn't as entertaining. I would say I'd give it about a 4.5.
Yeah. So I like Craig, I have a lot of notes too. I like that they talked about the darkness at the US Open in that episode and how Ricky had, he missed like a 3.5 footer on the last hole and he couldn't like see, and him and Rory talking in the locker room after was pretty cool. Like Rory was struggling and he was a few groups ahead of Ricky, and they didn't mention this, but Ricky wears prescription sunglasses now. So he was seeing things extra dark, which like really sucks. Right. So Ricky like blew up on Sunday anyway, but if he made that 3.5 footer, you don't know how that impacted his mindset. Who knows? But so yeah, they talked about the darkness there. They didn't mention once about the insane weather at Augusta. A fucking tree fell down at Augusta. Maybe that's Augusta saying like, keep this out. Like we're Augusta, we don't want to look less than superior, but they didn't talk about that. They didn't talk about Tiger's withdrawal. But I thought like the weather had such, was such a big factor. Like there was a good side of the draw and bad side of the draw, and it was, and Rom came out of the bad side of the draw and won the Masters, and it was a few shot difference between draws. So that was, they didn't talk about that. Joel and Gino, I thought was another like powerful episode at the end when, there's a bit of a spoiler if you haven't seen it, Mike, but like last year, I think we fell in love with Joel, or everyone that watched like fell in love with Joel as his character, kind of like not giving too much of a shit. Like, I know I'm not supposed to be this good when he played well at the US Open. But this year he didn't, like he legitimately didn't play well.
Yeah.
And he kind of refused to see a mental coach, and they juxtaposed him and Wyndham Clark, who saw a mental coach and then went on to win the US Open. They really juxtaposed those two. Gino, his caddy, like really, really pushed for Joel to see someone, and maybe he is now, and that'd be good. But Gino like loves this guy. Joel was like pushing him, like, go caddy for Taylor Gooch on Live and be a millionaire. And he's like, no, I want a caddy for you. Like you're my best friend basically. And it was like, oh, that's cool. Like that tugged on the heartstrings a little bit.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. Like Craig said, ZJ is just a cringe, like terrible. I like was so awkward watching his episodes.
Yeah.
And Keegan, I think like Craig said, deserved a spot on the Ryder Cup team, but class act for him. Like I also was not a Keegan fan, I don't know, 5 or 10 years ago, and now it's changing. Maybe he's just more mature now, but like them showing, and maybe it's just for the cameras, but him seemingly genuinely caring about the Ryder Cup team anyway and like cheering on JT with his kids, maybe it's for the cameras, who knows, but it looked pretty genuine, so seemed like a good guy.
Wanting to make a team so bad and then like basically getting cut, like I was gutted for him. And as someone who was cut from teams like 400 times in my life growing up, like it sucks. I got a really funny story actually, really quick. I played hockey at the Burnaby Winter Club growing up. So there was like some crazy parents and kids. There was this one kid, I won't say the name. He was a cunt, but he was a good hockey player. They would do it old school there. So when you were like trying out for the team, coaches would call you into the room. Usually they'd only do this for like the last, like if you're trying to make the top team. So my second year at him, I was like trying to make A1 and like made it to like the final round, whatever. And I ended up getting cut, and thank God this kid didn't do this to me. But other kids were going into the room, and the kid who knew he made the team would stand outside the coach's room. When a kid came out of the room, he would just give him the middle finger like that, regardless of whether he made the team or not. So kids are coming out in tears, and this guy's this like kind of fat kid, and he's smiling, and he's like that to the door. So savage.
Yeah, that's all I have to say on Full Swing. I want to get into cancel culture this week because I have somebody that I'm looking forward to canceling, but I will go last this week. So Craig, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, so I'm canceling everybody in the service industry, which I guess is kind of me too, but anyone who's getting tips in the service industry that expects a tip, don't ever put a receipt on someone's table and demand to get tipped. That is the most ridiculous maneuver of all time. So I'll leave it at that. Okay. I already said my piece on that bitch.
Love it. Yeah, we just talked about this. Zach Johnson, Ryder Cup captain. I'm not canceling him for them losing the Ryder Cup. I won't even say that like his decisions about the pairings and whatnot caused them to lose. It ultimately comes down to the players. Like, if you don't play well, you're not going to win. So that's not on him. I'm just canceling him for being such a dork. He was calling JT Jay Tizzle in like a non-ironic way. Like, it wasn't even like a joke. Like, he called him Jay Tizzle as in like he calls him that all the time. But the most cringe thing for me, his wife referred to him as captain, like captain of the Ryder Cup team. That's cool, whatever. He called his wife Captainess. And I just like could not do it. Like, you're not Captainess captain Ryder Cup team. Like, you were the captain, lead your team. Don't like bring your wife into this, who probably doesn't know too much about what's going on with Team USA. So
yeah.
ZJ, you're canceled.
I love that. He's been on the brink of being canceled for a long time, so I'm happy that somebody finally did it. I am canceling Wyndham Clark.
Ooh.
And I'm canceling Wyndham because this is something I actually fucking hate that people do, is that his comments this week saying that there should be a max of about 100 PGA Tour cards is just such a dick thing to do, because he's only saying that now. He's basically pulling out the ladder from people that are just like him. And he did not have this status until a couple years ago. And if there were 100 cards on tour, he would not be where he is today. But as soon as he gets to that position, he's like, yep, yeah, okay, we should have less and less guys. And I think it's just such a scummy, scummy thing to do. So I'm canceling him for his comments, canceling him for cheating during the tournament. He should have been canceled after he blew his ball 500 yards right at the U.S. Open, but
found the fairway.
Found the fairway, but he's been canceled. So I'm happy. I'm happy doing that. Okay, boys. I think that that does it for tonight's episode. Unfortunately, we couldn't get to our betting picks because we're recording this on a Sunday night. But I'm very excited to be introducing Adam Rockwood in just a few minutes. It's a phenomenal interview. And I hope you all enjoy it.
All right. We are now being joined by one of the craziest sociopaths I've ever known. I've known this guy my entire life. He usually thrives talking about himself and talking about sports. So I'm very excited, but I'm also very terrified for this interview. I have no idea how this is going to go. He's played pro hockey now for the past 6 years, playing in 6 different leagues for 7 different teams. Despite being a pretty good athlete, he battles the worst slice on the golf course I've ever seen. Welcome to the Bounce Back Bogey Podcast, Adam Rockwood.
Thanks for having me.
So I wanted to get into it. I know we're not going to ask you too many interview type questions, but I want to know, like, what's your typical day like as a pro hockey player over in Europe? How'd the season look?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's my 5th year pro, but thanks for doing your research. It's pretty easy, man. It's like you just kind of wake up, go to the rink. You're at the rink for probably 3 hours. Like, depends. Like, if it's like a if it's like a day after a game, like you're there for like maybe like an hour and a half and then come home and chill out. I mean, like, that's why, like, I've put a lot of emphasis in the past couple of years of like, where am I playing? Cause like, it's important to play. And like, you know, I was lucky enough to play in Innsbruck this year, which is like one of the most beautiful cities in the world, in my opinion. I was in Stockholm the year before that. So there's lots to do. You know, we're kind of in a profession where you're kind of born into a friendship. Like, you're kind of just given 20 friends right away. So like, you got to get close to them. But it helped playing in Austria this year because there's 10 imports per team. So, you know, there's a lot of North Americans over there. Like, every Sunday we'd watch football because it's kind of the only sport we could watch. The morning games would start at 7 p.m. for us. So that's a little bit different. But, yeah, it's just go to the rink, play some Xbox, watch. I mean, I watch a lot of TV, watch a lot of movies. But, yeah, it's pretty simple.
Yeah. So I wanted to tell a story from last night to give people an idea of kind of what kind of guy you are. So I always describe you as like, you're definitely like being not the center of attention, but you like bringing life to the party. So we were at dinner at this steakhouse where they like fry all the food in front of you and all that. And Adam always wants his group to be like the group at the table. Like, he wants like everyone to know that they're having the best time. And I told you, this guy's a sociopath. So he sets an alarm on his phone for every 5 minutes to ring so that like the four of us in his corner can hear it. And he tells us, he's like, all right, every 5 minutes this alarm goes off, everyone just start bursting out laughing. And then it got so detailed to the point that he's like, all right, this time I made the joke. And then the next 5 minutes, he's like, all right, we're laughing at Craig now. This time it's Craig. And he's like getting everyone going, just like, oh my God.
Yeah, but we also hijacked our buddy's birthday. So yesterday was his birthday party. It was like everything was like for him. And then like we sung him happy birthday, but it was also Craig's birthday the day before. So it was like happy birthday. And then like it ended. And then like our corner was like happy birthday. And we took the cupcake from the guy and we gave it to Craig. And everyone was like, what's fucking happening right now? Carm's like standing. He's like, it was so fucking good. Kobe's is elite though.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, $80 for three pieces of steak and like two pieces of lobster, but I don't know. It was pretty
good.
Some
of the boys got rinsed. I didn't even pay $100. I was pumped. But you got
my bill was $250. Yeah, I got a bottle though. Yeah, it was hefty. One guy's was what was Travis $650?
$600. Yeah.
Yeah, $600.
Well, that's what happens. We order 22 shots.
Yeah.
I don't feel bad.
Yeah.
Like.
Okay, I want to do something. I want to say some names of some athletes, and I just want you to like off the cuff give me however long you want what you think of them. So there'll be golfers and there's gonna be not golfers. John Rahm.
Sick. Rahm is nasty. Like the ankle thing, how he like reinvented his swing. Like I just think Rahm is sick and he's so likable. Like I don't like whatever. Yeah, it's sick.
Yeah. All right, Rory McIlroy.
Oh my God, dude. I hate Rory. I think Rory is like, he doesn't win. So it's like, is he the, like, everyone's like, he's the best. It's like, he's not. He sucks.
How many wins do you think he has on the PGA?
I think his swing is perfect, dude. Like, his swing is amazing. But like, if like, when is the last win he had? Like,
how many wins do you think he has on the PGA?
I don't know, but he has what? Four majors, two majors. Four?
Yeah, four. Yeah.
Okay. Well, like he was literally supposed to like take over after Tiger. It's like Tiger has four majors in like a day.
Yeah.
I think Rory's like, he's just like a bitch. Like he's just always complaining about shit. And he's like, I don't know. Like he just bothers me. And he's like a little midget too. He's like 5'2".
He's very he's very calculated with what he says too. Like he's so afraid to say the wrong thing.
And I don't know. I mean, Craig, this, I knew he'd throw him in there because he knows I hate him. Like I hate him. And Craig, part of why I hate him is because Craig fucking strokes him every tournament. And he's like, he's like, look how good he is. And like, I'm like, look how good he is. He hasn't won it since 2010.
It has been 10 years since he won a major. So I'll give you that.
Dude, he won four before he was 25 and his dad put a future on him when he was like 15. to win the, I don't know if it was a major or the Open.
To win the Open by the time he was 25. So yeah, it was coming down to the last couple of years when he won.
Really quick before we move on for Rory, why do you think he doesn't win more?
I think Rory is, I think golf is a game where it's like the tools are important. I mean, it's a weird analogy, but like the tools are important, but like the toolbox is the most important. And like, in my opinion, like the toolbox is like what's between the ears. And I don't think Rory's like mentally like a good competitor. Like he's just not. Like, I think he crumbles. I think he like that mentality of always complaining and like bitching about stuff. Those guys are never like dogs. Like, I think Rom is like a fucking like killer. Like if he's coming down Sunday and your guy you're cheering for is like in the lead and you're like seeing Rom play well, it's like, yikes. Rory, like, you know, at the first sign of adversity, like he's going to like bitch about something. Like, I don't know. Like, I just think he's just like a kind of like a mental midget that way. And like, I think I'll give him a benefit of the doubt. Like, he has like the weight of the golf world on his shoulders, man. Like, and like, it's probably brutal. Like every tournament he loses probably feels like shit, but like, I don't know, like whatever, like, yeah. You know, that's, I mean, that's what I think it is, but what,
I think that's
why do you think he's the one?
Like, I don't, I think as a golfer, I look at his game and I'm like, okay, he drives it unbelievable. But then like the last few years, his wedging and his putting just hasn't been good enough. Like for me, I'm like, I don't look at him and I'm like, I think it's mental and like, he doesn't have this will to win or whatever, but that's kind of the answer I figured.
It's not a will to win. Everyone wants to win. But I think like for me, I shoot like around 90s. So it's like, for me to break 90, it's actually like kind of a tough hump.
Mm-hmm.
And then for you guys, like breaking par is like different than like, you know, shooting par. Like it's like a huge hump. Those guys are at like the top of like coming second and winning is a huge, huge like overcome. And like, it takes a lot. And I just don't see it with them. Like, I just don't. Like, there's many athletes in the world that I think that about. I think they're very good players. There's so many tennis players that are like that. Like Tsitsipas, this guy's never going to win in his life. If he does, like, everything has to go right. But I don't know if you guys watch tennis, but like, this guy's an amazing tennis player. Like, he hits the ball incredible. He's 6'5", moves great. He can't win. Like, he just can't. And like, tennis and golf are like the two.
Is he like a Kyrgios or what?
What?
Is he like a Kyrgios?
Kyrgios is like a head case. I think Kyrgios is actually the most talented player that's ever played tennis.
Oh, talented.
Like, yeah, he is a joke with the racket. But, like, and he's a great athlete. This guy can dunk the ball, like, but he's just a, like, snap show.
Yeah, I think Dustin Johnson's kind of golf's version of him early in his career.
Like, yeah, but DJ was won all a the... ton, though, dude. Nick's never
I know. But DJ early in his career, like, tons of problems with coke, like, yeah, constantly just getting busted for drugs and all that. So
I'm also a big DJ fan.
Yeah.
DJ only has two majors, so I wouldn't.
But I don't. Yeah. I don't. You never hear from DJ. I feel like whenever there's something going on, Rory's like, with his little dumb hat. His. I don't like Rory at all.
Yeah, I don't think Rory asked to be this though, but he kind of got thrown into the. Yeah. Being the spokesperson for the PGA Tour, I don't think he wanted that, and that has definitely added some pressure. But he did win. No one cares about this. He did win the FedEx Cup 2 years ago. So it's not like he hasn't won. Right. He just hasn't won majors recently.
Oh, and also, by the way, it was unbelievable when he was choke city at the Ryder Cup and he was crying about it. And Craig was like, that's so sick that he was crying. He cares so much. I'm like, I think the complete opposite. What a loser. Like, Craig literally, he's like, that's unreal, man. Did you see that? He sends me and he's like, this is so cool. I'm like, oh my God.
So you just want everyone to be DJ and pretend they don't care.
No, I just like, it's like, if you cry over like a loss, sure. But he's like, I don't know. Like, I don't like, okay, I play hockey. You would never in a million years see a hockey player after a game be like crying in an interview, being like, I played bad. Like,
guys never cry when they win the Stanley Cup. And lose the Stanley Cup.
Like, yeah, that never happens. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying he was crying because he was playing bad. That's what happened. He's like, I let everyone down, blah, blah, blah. If you, like, unless it's like a goalie after a game that like shit the bed and like literally was like, he's the reason. I mean, I guess it's different. He's like, it's so individual in golf, but like, I don't know, man. I just think it, I thought it was like soft. It's different if you lose and you're like, I'm sad. It, like, that meant a lot to me, but he was like, I suck.
I bet there's an interview of a hockey player after a cup final somewhere where he's like in tears because he could have done more to win, you know?
Yeah, find it. I don't know, sure. But like, I'd probably chirp that guy too. I don't know. Like, yeah, I don't know. I just, I loved when Rory was struggling the Ryder. Let me be clear too. I would like to see him win. It'd be cool for golf. But like, I'm just so sick of the narrative that he's like the guy. He's not.
Yeah. All right. Steph Curry and LeBron.
Steph is, I used to hate Steph because I'm a huge LeBron guy. And it was like, fuck, man. Like this guy, but he's, how do you hate him? Like, he's just the greatest shooter ever. He's amazing. And then LeBron's the GOAT. He's the GOAT. He's the,
like,
the GOAT.
You're
GOAT.
LeBron over MJ, right?
Yeah. And I think
I'm the only one that's MJ over LeBron. But I know the least about basketball.
You don't watch basketball.
I don't watch basketball either. But I'd say LeBron too. But I don't know.
I don't know. I like winners.
Okay.
What did you just say?
I said I like guys
winners,
who
and
win.
And Rory's his favorite guy, and he likes winners.
Yeah, Craig's one of those people that doesn't realize that MJ couldn't get out of the first round when he was first playing basketball.
Yeah,
I do hate the argument that, like LeBron gets heat. Like, gets criticism for making it to the finals and then losing in the finals. It's like, well, he carried his teams there. I don't even know basketball.
It's insane,
like,
dude. They'll find any slant to talk him down. Like, they will.
Yeah.
I do think, I will say, at my peak of like LeBron, like supporting him, I was like, it's so obvious. Blah, blah. I will say, like, in my opinion, like, I've gone to the point where if like Craig says like he likes MJ, I'm kind of like, okay, like, I see you. Like, but I'm like, I don't think that, but like, I can see why. But before, I'd sit there for 3 hours and I would talk to you until you like either left or like were on my side. Like, I died on the hill big time, but now I'm like, whatever. The Last Dance also helped change my opinion a little bit, I think.
Do you think there's any golfer on the PGA that could beat up like a middleweight in the NHL?
But like, what's a middleweight in the NHL? Like, there's only like 10 guys that might fight on a regular basis now.
Yeah, I guess now it's not as common. I don't know. Like, I see a middleweight, like, it's not necessarily a fighter, but somebody maybe like JT Miller kind of would be an example. Like, a guy who's pretty tough.
Like, I think JT Miller would probably, huge. I think he'd probably, yeah, I mean, he's probably given up like 20 pounds. I mean, I don't know. It's tough because, like I said, I think fighting is a lot of like, getting hit. Like, that's not just like being big. I think Brooks is huge, but like, can Brooks fight? Like, I don't know, like, probably not. But
you were the guy to play devil's advocate, you were always the guy too though that said so much. You're like a big believer that size is a lot in fights, right? Because you said like you would kill Ronda Rousey.
No, this argument I came up with in college. We had a guy on our team. He was 205. He was 5'9", 205. And this kid was ripped. And his name is Gino. And I was like, and this is when Ronda Rousey was huge. And I was so sick of hearing about her. And I was like, and I found out she fights at 135. And I was like, that is so light. Like, I was like, the smallest guy, you know, like, is like 150, like the smallest guy, but like, and that's even crazy to find. Right. Like, and I was like, and my argument was, and this is when I was at Wisconsin, I was like, if Gino trained fighting, this is the guy who's 205. I was like, if he trained fighting for 2 months straight, I was like, I think he'd beat the shit out of Ronda Rousey. Like, if he just learned how to punch proper, like, cause it's like, and then like, we had one half of my team being like, you know, kind of like, you know, we had one half being like, what? Like, she's a pro, man. Like, blah. And then we had one half being like, yeah, I'd fucking murder her. And then the argument got like out. It got like to like the girls hockey team. And then like, I was like being called sexist and shit. And I'm like, they're like, dude, they'd walk by me in the hall and they're like, rock. Like, what a loser. I'm like, okay. Like, it's a hypothetical debate. Like, and, that was my point. It was like, and then they were like, oh, like, it's not enough size. I was like, okay, like, would The Rock beat her up? Like, he's 260. And they're like, yeah. I'm like, okay, then when does size become a component? Like, and I mean, but like, but he's still like a hockey player. He's an aggressive, like, I mean, I don't think golfers are like, you know, like they're not like that. It's, I mean, I don't know. It's a weird argument. I actually have a question for you guys. I have a couple actually, but, okay. I saw a clip the other day and it's like my personal, like favorite golf clip. It's not my favorite, but it's up there, but it's not like a sick shot. Like it's like a nice shot, but it's not like a, like what, like it's not like a Tiger Masters chip. Like it's like, but it's like my personal, cause it's the Rory driver off the deck where he crushes it. And like, do you guys know that one where he like, it's like the ping is like, it's so loud and it's just like sick. It's like driver off the deck. Like the, it's like fluffed up in the rough and he like crushes the ball or
the
like
Rory or Ricky.
Sorry. Did I say Ricky?
No, you said Rory.
Yeah. It's Ricky. I'm, yeah. I said,
okay. Yeah. I know which one with the orange driver. Yeah.
It's like, it's such a sick clip. And I watch it every time it comes up on my Insta. I never scroll by it. I always watch it. Or like the Tiger slice where it's like crazy. And then it like lands and then it like jets, right. Like doesn't go in or anything, but it's like, I don't know. Like, do you guys have any like hidden, like ones that you probably like don't see much, but like, it's like personal, like, fuck, I love that shot.
That's a good question. I got to think about that for a second.
I don't know how I can think of one right now that's like not talked about, because all the highlights I think of are ones that are talked about, but I guess like any Tiger stinger would be a good one. And I can think of one specifically at the Masters on hole 7. It's kind of a tighter par 4, like not a huge, it's not a hole that you typically think about when you think of the Masters. And it's just, he hit a nice stinger there. I'm sure he's done it a bunch of times, but just with the backdrop, the lush green grass and the pine straw in the background, like any Tiger stinger will get me going.
Yeah, I have two and they're both stingers. So one of them was last year. I think it was the Irish Open. It was on 18 when Rory had that. He hit like the nastiest punch cut into the wind. And then he made the putt to win, which was sick. And then another one that comes to mind is at the Sony Open in Hawaii a couple of years ago, Gary Woodland hit this stinger on 18. That was, I think the apex was 4.5 feet or something. And it went 230 or 235. And they have a view of it from in front and behind. And you just see the ball kind of take off and it doesn't get higher than his head. It's so sick.
That's unreal.
As a golfer that's in the 90s, do you have the stinger in the bag, Adam?
Dude.
With his lob wedge, yeah.
Yeah, with my putter.
Oh, my God. Do you want to tell the Northview story? You have to tell the Northview story. I think this is all time.
I don't know. We were playing, what was it, Northview?
Yeah, Northview. So out in Surrey,
so
right?
So we scheduled the tee time at, like, 3 so we could, like, drink and then like roll it into the night. And then I forget where we did that, but we went out, but like it was me, him, and then two of our good buddies who like one of them's like a little bit better than me, and then one of them's like around like 100, like 105 type. And then so it's usually him and Craig versus me and the guy who's like around mine, and it's actually usually pretty competitive, like because we had like whatever. So we're on hole like, I don't know, 11. And we all had a terrible front nine, like, and we were crushing drinks, like, whatever. It was just one of those days where they're just going down like easy. And then like we're on hole 11. Yeah, it was like the furthest hole from the clubhouse, thank God. And we're on the green. I remember I was on the green or something like early, and like we had the hole in the bag, like me and my partner, and we like fucking zooed it, man. Like lost the hole, like somehow, like we didn't lose it, but we tied it. And it was like the hole where it's like when you're playing against Craig, for us, it's like you gotta take those like advantages. So like my buddy who's playing against me, he's like he's one of those guys where he'll miss a putt and then he'll putt like 4 more of them. Right? Like he'll be like, oh, like let me just see that line again, and he'll like do another one. And he'll like miss that. He'll be like, okay, like, and then it's like, dude, I don't have time for this. So he's on like whole ball like 3. I went up and I like full on like slap shot like with my putter. I'm like I'm sending this ball in the water. I'm like pretty crushed. I took a 3-pound divot out of the green.
Oh, no.
On hole 11, man, and I was like actually horrified. I was like, oh, I would have got banned, like cut, like And like the two guys, not me and Craig, were like on their knees, like crying, laughing. Craig's like immediately like fixing it. I'm like
performing surgery on the green.
I was sitting there like, what the fuck did I just do, man? Like, and then like no one saw somehow, and we like ran away. We like fucking bolted out of there.
Yeah, if Northview's listening, I did a pretty good surgery on the green that should come back nicely. Yeah. I want to know. So you've obviously battled a slice like nothing I've ever seen for the last, well, your entire life. So when Adam sets up to a drive, he's a lefty. So his feet are pointing right of the right tree line and like has to slice it back in play. It's hilarious. How do you think you go about fixing a slice?
Well, it has gotten better. It was absolutely like brutal. It was like banana. I think you gave me good advice one time where you're like, you have to like stop compensating for it. I mean, I'm just like, I'm not a golfer. So like, I don't go out there I do go out there to score low, but it's like, I want to just fucking kill the thing. Like, and, I think like, it's taken me a long time to realize like, you're going to go further if you just take like 5% off of it. But I think that was really good advice that you gave me, Craig, was like, cause I would literally be setting up because I like, say I'd have like a decent first three holes. Hole four is like a dog leg, right? And I'm like aiming like behind me to like, like, and like Craig be like, dude, like just set up normally. I'm like, no, I'm score. I can break 90 here. And like, but then, you know, I got like fall apart, but yeah, I think you just gotta like trust like you can like hit a normal shot. I mean, it's all reps though, I think. Like if you have a decent enough swing, which I do, like I think if I just went and played, like I think it would sort itself out.
Yeah, you kept aiming farther and farther right, and then you're just never gonna fix the issue, right? So that was the big thing, was I was like, just pay attention to where your feet are going.
Yeah, and you're good to go with too for guys like us, because you're like willing to help and like patient. So it's like every time, it's funny because he'll play with me and like sometimes like I'll like just put one in like the shit and like he'll like be like, do you want me to tell you like what you did? And I'm like, shut up. And then like we get the car, we're like driving, and I'm like, all right, what was it?
taking driving advice from Craig is also
dangerous.
Very dangerous. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not the best driver of the golf ball for sure.
I like that you asked though, Craig, if they want the advice, because I hate when people just start giving advice.
Oh, I'll never be the guy to just give advice. Yeah. I'll take a back seat, and then usually when they struggle long enough, somebody will like ask me what I think or like if there's anything they can do. And that's usually what they do.
That's good.
But fuck. Yeah, we talked about that. That's like that. I think that guy got canceled.
That guy did get canceled.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I have much else to
ask. I can't believe you haven't brought up Garrett's putting.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I should have wrote that down. Okay, so do you want to tell it or do you want me to tell it to our listeners? We need to get a video of him putting for our socials. This is – so, Mike, we've gone over, you kind of in the past have demons on the greens. This guy is nothing like I've ever seen. It's full Michael J. Fox meets – like an ALS patient.
He does have like the yips, like even like
some real
like,
full life
yips. One time I remember we were at Brew Street and he got a flight of beer and like he was like getting one and he was like shake and like he was sitting beside me like shaking it on me and I like turned over. I was like, what the fuck are you doing, dude? And he's like sorry, like and I was like, oh, like you, and he's like, yeah, I get it sometimes. I was like, oh, what? And then like every putt, it's like,
yeah,
oh, that's horrifying. City.
It's so, yeah. So basically, anytime he does something precise, like I'd love to see Garrett give someone an open heart surgery, he'd kill him within 10 seconds. Like, they'd be fucking dead.
Yeah, so, you'd love to see that, eh?
Yeah. So, this guy who has
to
real
see a murder,
life, he has full life yips. He's like addicted to golf and he's tried everything putting. Like, I went to Burnaby Mountain, gave him a lesson. And I couldn't figure it out. Like, you don't put a ball there. There's no yip. And then as soon as you put a ball there, he convulses. And it's wild. So now the thing that's worked, actually, our other buddy, Trevor Garifano, he fixed it, like, quite a bit. It's unbelievable now. He's putting left-handed. I don't know why I didn't try that. It should have been pretty obvious. Like, we tried eyes closed, looking at the hole, different grips, everything.
Dude, he and used now he's to going, croquet it.
Yeah, he used to go between feet. The legs.
That's no, illegal.
Like, seriously, is it
yeah.
illegal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it? Why?
Just Bryson is. Was.
What a weird.
Or no, it was actually illegal. Yeah, I don't know. They don't want you standing a certain way.
You can't straddle golf it. You can stand beside it. You're allowed to do that.
I did not know that was illegal. But yeah. he would do it, and like we'd be like, okay, like you're not doing that. Like, it's, like this is embarrassing.
That's like bowling between the legs. And then what about this one,
Craig? He'd do like a wrist shot, he'd do like a one footed like when you do like a snapshot in hockey.
Yeah,
he would do that like putting, and it was I've seen that. Hey, like come on.
I'm surprised he's like, yeah, he'll
and like this... and like the funniest shit would be like the first hole, man. He usually like has like his the rest of his game's like okay, so he'll like get on for like par and he's like putting for par and he'll yip it bad, and all three of us, it's always me, him, and like this other buddy of ours, like we'll like either start laughing or like or so one of us will try and help him. He'll be like, he'll freak out. Like, he'll be like, not fucking today. Like, I've tried everything or whatever. Like, okay, dude. Like,
he'll always have to announce now on the very first hole.
Yeah.
He'll have to announce to the entire group, hey, today's not the day to like make fun of this. I'm trying to play a good round. And then he starts like quad, triple, and then he loosens up. But yeah, the left-handed thing's working out for him.
I have one question for him.
Yeah.
When you lived and played in Stockholm, were you single? Because I heard that the Hinge game over there is like unparalleled.
Yeah. No, I wasn't, but yeah, it. I was for like I was for like the last like 2 weeks, and like yeah, it's pretty unreal, man. Like I mean, dude, the girls in Sweden are unbelievable. Like they're gorgeous. Like,
yeah.
I had one for you guys. So like for me, like playing hockey, like, you know, I played in a couple like game sevens in my life. Like those days are like, they're long days. Cause like we play at seven, like it's like all day. It's like pretty nerving feeling. Like season could end today. Like, you know, it's gonna be a packed house. Like it's just, it's a lot of like anxious, and then once the puck drops, you're like, all right, like we're good. I've always been curious, like going into a Sunday round, like say you're in like the leading group or whatever, Craig, I'm sure you don't have much experience, but maybe Mike can speak on this, but like generally what time are you guys teeing off if you're in the last group? And then also it's like, are you guys the same way where it's like very nervous all the way? And then like, once you kind of hit that first like tee shot, you're kind of like, all right, like we're settled in. Or does it like just stay? Cause golf is like, so like, it's a lot mentally. Like, I don't know. I was always curious about that.
Yeah. So, I'll answer this a couple different ways. So the most nervous I felt like kind of during a tournament, was when I was trying to keep my PGA Tour Canada card, I had to make the cut in order to keep my card. And like you said, like as soon as the puck drops or as soon as you first hit your first drive, your nerves tend to like kind of go down a little bit. But as the day goes on and you know what the cut is and you know how close you have to be, because golf is such a mental and a much slower sport, like you have a lot more time to think about. You have a lot more time to think about like what's going on and all of like the possible outcomes. So in that scenario, like I was 100% like way more nervous during each shot and during each hole. But on like a regular tournament day, even if you're in the lead group and you're teeing off, like it's usually around 2 PM, you're nervous for the first tee shot and then you're fine.
Mm.
Yeah.
But I would say the biggest thing, like I said, is like, you just have so much time to think about stuff in between shots, and you usually know exactly kind of where you are on the leaderboard or exactly what you need to do. So there's a little bit more of like a thinking game.
Yeah. I didn't play pro golf, so I can't really speak to Mike's level, but when I was a junior, it was definitely leading up to the first tee, was super nervous. And then after the first tee, you kind of settle in. if you hit a good tee shot.
I was gonna say, what if you have a bad tee shot? Then I'd be like a zoo upstairs.
Exactly. So it depends how you're playing. Once you get a few good shots in a row, then you're rolling. I found too, though, it also depended on how your game was or what you were struggling with. If you were struggling with anything, like if you were having a rough week with the putter, I was nervous until I had my first 5-footer and I made my first 5-footer. And if I didn't make the first 5-footer, this is like really bad mental game to like be thinking about this before the round leading into it. If you don't make that first one, then you're nervous for the next one and so on. And that's just not the right attitude to have, but certainly a big factor in golf and why it makes golf like a fun thing to do is to overcome these nerves too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I have kind of two stories. So one I've already told before where like I'm a mental midget for sure, but warming up on the range to get to nationals when we're in regionals, I told that story and I was like, basically all four of our teammates are like giving me a golf lesson because I couldn't even get the ball in the air. So like the buildup before you tee off is definitely the biggest. And then teeing off, I don't think there's anything quite in sports like the first tee in golf as far as nerves affecting an athlete. Like I've had it pretty bad to the point where like you don't even feel your legs. And the worst is when it catches you out of nowhere. Like you don't think you're going to be nervous, but maybe you haven't played a tournament in a while. And then you get to the first tee and you're like, oh fuck, I can't calm down. Like this is really bad. And then I had one where it was like that, where I wasn't expecting to get nervous, but I was playing really well. And it was like the Vancouver Open. And I looked at the leaderboard going to the back nine the last day. And I was like one shot back. So I was like, oh fuck. Like I'm not usually this good. Like I'm not like near I wasn't in the last group, but I think I was in like the third last group. And then I was like expecting to just choke on the front nine and played okay on the front. And I was like, oh fuck, now what? And then like, I remember I had driver pulled. I go back to my bag, grab my like TMB 2 iron, and I hit this thing so fat it like didn't even make the fairway on the 10th hole at Fraser View, and then proceeded to shoot myself out of the tournament immediately. Made double and then like another bogey, and then I doubled my last hole too.
I've always dreamed about hosting a podcast, so I have a fun question, if that counts for funsies.
Sure. Yep.
If each finger on your hand produced a beverage, which 5 would you pick?
If every finger on your hand produced a beverage?
Yeah, that's what I
said. Are we getting like super specific into the beverages, or are you saying like
anything you want, Michael?
Okay. Like is beer, do we choose the kind of beer, or can you just say
who said beer?
No, but like if you were to choose a beer.
Oh, you're saying all beer? No, you have to choose
like a specific beer. Okay.
Okay.
I would go coffee has to be on there. Coffee, and then like I'd choose like a local craft beer that nobody knows. That would be 2.
Wow, that's so cool.
Why would you choose a local craft beer that nobody knows?
I'm saying I'd get like my favorite beer, which is like a Stanley Park Sunsetter, which is unbelievable.
Oh, listen to him now.
And then
what else? Hero.
I like pop once in a while for breakfast, so I'd have like a just a Coke on there.
He's not kidding, he has pop for breakfast.
Nice.
I had cake for breakfast this morning
and lunch and dinner. He hasn't eaten other than that.
And then
wait, so you said Coke Zero for one?
No, just Coke, regular Coke. Or I'd do like a Diet Dr. Pepper, because that's the best.
I can't take you seriously.
Somebody has to take the other two, because now I'm scared I'm gonna miss something. I got like a warm drink. Coffee is the best drink on the planet by far. I got pop and I got beer.
Okay, coffee, I'm going
pop, beer. No, you have to finish.
That's too many drinks.
That's like a lot of drinks. Yeah,
buddy. I'm going 5 coffee. For the rest of your life. That's all you can drink. These 5.
Oh, water. You didn't water. Say that. You didn't oh, say that. Bad, that's all we could drink.
That's all you got. Only got 5 to okay. survive.
Okay. Water's going 4, and then I'd probably go like Gatorade or something.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Yeah. I'm going
what flavor.
Yellow.
Yeah, yellow Gatorade.
Oh, what?
Yellow is like,
or purple G2. Purple G2.
G2 purple.
Yeah. I'm on team yellow with Craig.
Sure. These are wildly
yellow. Yellow never used to get hate until Biden got in office, and then all of a sudden everyone hates yellow.
Yellow's goated. Red's disgusting. Biden.
Whatever happened to just like a nice cold glacier blue?
Blue's good.
Those are the goat. Those are the goat.
Blue's a good safe play. That's a nice
No,
safe
no, no, not blue. Glacier blue.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Those are
glacier
elite.
Blue.
It's the Isn't lighter just kind.
Blue?
It's
lighter oh. blue, Craig.
Yeah, but is it the original blue?
No, that's blue. That's blue. This is glacier blue.
Okay.
What's your
I'll go, yeah. Since this is the only thing we can ever drink, you got to throw water on there just for like health. So water, this is going to repeat Craig's, but water, yellow Gatorade is goated. Oh, you guys are crazy. Yeah. Coffee. I'll throw Coke on there just as like, I don't know.
You guys are holding hands.
I know.
Yeah,
and then,
we literally have the same one.
But I'm not going my local craft beer. I'll stick with a nice solid Budweiser here.
Yeah. I'd do like I'd consider a Coors Light. Instead of a craft beer.
Yeah, I hate your taste buds. Coors Light.
I love Coors Light.
Yeah, I'm going water, coffee. Probably I need some alcohol on there. So I would actually, I'm going to put on a whiskey instead of a beer.
Fancy.
Yeah. Just because I need it for golf too.
Nobody actually likes whiskey, though. People pretend to like whiskey.
Yeah,
it's like an IPA.
IPAs are disgusting.
IPAs taste like soap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wood. They taste like wet wood.
Wet wood. Finish and then your pies. I'm going to go instead of just taking a regular pop, I'm going to take a cream soda Slurpee.
Wow. That's
a
good.
Good one.
You beat me to the frozen drink. No one else had one. I was going to say.
Yeah.
One.
I'm a big frozen drink guy. And then last one, I'm probably going Glacier Blue.
Yeah. So I'm going a different route. I've never had a cup of coffee in my life. I don't need it. I grew up with a mom who was like very dependent on coffee, and she would get like caffeine headaches, and like I was like that looks miserable. I also think it tastes like shit, and like if I want to like coffee, I gotta like make it into like a basically like a milkshake. No coffee. I'm not getting water because I'll just use someone else's finger for that. Smart, so smart, smartest. One finger will be a Moscow Mule.
Okay.
One finger will be a Bud Light. One finger will be my favorite pop ever is a vanilla Coke.
Nice.
Four is going to be a McDonald's vanilla milkshake. And five's gotta be Gatorade. Glacier Blue Gatorade.
Hey, this is so unfair because you've clearly thought about this for like
I know. I won.
This is the other.
I won the five finger game.
Yeah.
He loves this shit. He writes movie reviews, like full on movie reviews and everything. But the worst one is your take on It. He gives so there's an app called Letterboxd. It's actually kind of sick. I don't know if you even still do it. Yeah, but you guys like Mike, you would love it if you haven't been on it. So like you rate movies and like you actually do get bored and like write shit about the movie.
Yeah.
And then like you can see all your buddies, like what they rate movies. And then usually you get in debates over it. He gives It 5 stars and like an unbelievable rating.
Is 5 the max on Letterboxd?
5's the max.
That, did I give it like a 5? I don't think I gave it a 5. Did I give it a 5?
I think you did because me and Dom were
shocked.
Yeah,
I did give it a 5. I thought it was an awesome movie, man. I saw it in theaters and like, I'm not saying it was like super scary, but I just thought it was like a great, like it was a great, like, it, like sounds dumb, like experience. Like it's really funny. Those kids are hilarious, I thought. And then like, I don't know, the graphics were cool. It was a great movie. I thought a good summer movie.
I don't know. Do you have anything? What else?
I was going to ask about hockey, but if we don't want to go there, no.
I mean, we can always,
I'm fine. I'm fine.
I feel like it's too long. All right. No. I want to know about hockey. I got one question. So you started out in the A and then played in the coast for a while too. I want to know one, like, how different is each league? Like, is the A way better as far as not the quality of players, but just how you're treated and everything? And then on top of that, what's life in the coast like? Like, are there guys that, obviously, I know you were invited to like a few different camps and stuff, and I know you usually sign like a pretty decent contract with teams, but are there guys in the coast that are like working second jobs to get by?
Okay, so your first question, it really depends on where you go. There's teams in the coast that treat you unbelievably. You're just like, you're not paid great. The level of play is, yes, it's very, very like the pace is like way higher. Okay. Everyone's habits are way, like, I was actually watching my old shifts like the other day, like when I played in the A, and like my habits back then were just like so top notch, compared to now, or like even like when I got sent down to the coast and you play in the coast for like 2 months, like you just adapt. And then what's life like in the coast? Is that what you said? The coast is the most fun you can ever have playing hockey. I will say, like, I was on an AHL deal when I played in the coast. So like I was making AHL money while playing in the coast. So like that obviously affects like my day-to-day like happiness, but like you're all living in the same apartment complex. And it's just fun. I mean, I don't know. Like those guys like don't take it too seriously. Like, you know, like half of them do, but it's like, even still, you're in the coast. Like you can't, like, if you're trying to be a hero every day, like it's just going to be weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was the most fun I've ever had. And like, I put on a team just full of characters. Like these people aren't real, man. Like they're nuts. So like, but no one's working like second jobs mid-season. You can't, like, there's no way, like you could never do that. But a lot of them work like summer jobs.
Yeah.
Nice. I was going to ask about your transfer. So you went from Wisconsin to Northern Michigan. Was that,
yeah,
how did that come about? Is that something you initiated? And like,
no,
if it was a bad relationship, you don't have to talk about it, but
it was, I'm fine with talking about it, but like, it's, so what happened was, freshman and sophomore year, we had the two worst years in Wisconsin history. Ooh. And like
recently referenced on Spit and Chicklets, by the way.
Yeah.
Sarah Nurse brought it up because the women's team was killing it. And then she's like, the guys' team was like the worst in history.
Yeah.
And
I was crazy.
Oh, that was Adam's year.
The women's team was, they were like, they like literally never lost a game. It was like their first all year in the country. My freshman year, I came in, we had 11 freshmen. It was a really poor job done by them. Like they have this like 4 year cycle, which is like, it's so stupid, but we were terrible. Sophomore year, just as bad, almost as bad. And then obviously they cleaned house. Eve's coached there for like 13 years or whatever. So then they bring in Tony Granato and I'm like fired up. I'm like, Tony and Don Granato, who's head coach of Buffalo now. I'm fired up. Like the way they coach, like so offensive. Then like the day before I was flying home after my finals, sophomore year, Tony calls me in. I hear for a meeting. I'm like, I don't know what this is about. He's like, yeah, I hate doing this, but like, we gotta part ways or whatever he said. And I was like, what? Like, I was a guy where like, I was top six. Like I went in freshman year. I started third line wing. By the third weekend, I was first line center the entire year, my freshman year, running first power play. And like, and I liked that I did that because I felt like I earned it. Like I came in through line, I wasn't given anything. I wasn't on the power play. And then like by the third weekend, I was like, boom, like kind of like the guy. And then sophomore year, same thing. I was like top six all year. And I was like, what? Like I was like, what the fuck's going on? And they cut like six other guys that never played. And then there was me. And he was like, all he told me was like, yeah, it's not hockey related. I was like, what happened? Like I'd never got in trouble. Like what are you talking about? Like, and it was like brutal, man. It was the lowest point in my life. Like coming home, telling like Craig and like my friends, like I felt like a failure. Like, and calling my dad was brutal. that was like, I just felt like such a like failure kind of. And I remember like I had like everyone on the team, like everyone on the team was like in my apartment because like all these other guys got cut, but I was like, yeah, like we got to make room. For me, like they were like, what the hell is going on here? Like, and it would be different. Like if I was like a piece of shit and like, they're like, yeah, dude, like get them out of here. Like they'd be like, see ya. But they were like, guys were in there and guys were like, I want to go talk to him, man. Like, this is fucked. I'm like, dude, I don't want to play for him. Like, I don't want to like beg. Like,
yeah.
So then what was the worst part was that they cut me at so late that like other schools that I would like would have transferred to, like my agent at the time was like talking to like Penn State or St. Cloud, which are good hockey programs, and they're like, we'd love them, but like we don't have money the first year, and like that was just way too much. And yeah. Northern called and like loved like him, like the coach on the phone, and like he's like, all you have to do is pay half for the first semester. And I was like, fuck, like, and it was like there was a couple other teams, but you know what's funny is the coach that brought me into Northern, so I had to sit that year. After that year, he got fired.
Oh no.
So the guy who brought me in was gone, and I was like, great. And then the new guy that came in, best coach I've ever had.
Nice.
Like he'll be in the NHL if he wants to be. I think he kind of just wants to be a college coach and he's really good at it, but he came in, we had 25 wins. So his first year was my first year at Northern. So like we had 25 wins, which is third in the country. You know, I had a great year that year. And then the second year after that, we had a good year too. So
sick.
Yeah, it was that was one of the lowest points of my life. Like definitely of my career. Yeah.
That's rough. On a brighter note, like what's the best barn or best atmosphere that you've played in across college, pro, any of that?
So I'll give you one for each. So college, North Dakota is like incredible.
Yeah.
It really is like unbelievable. Like when they score their first goal of the game, like fireworks go off, cannons. And it's cool because in college, the student section is usually behind one net.
Mm-hmm.
Theirs is like the entire side. So you step out from the bench and like come out for like warm up or like whatever, like for like the opening lineups. And instead of them being like to the left, like down by the net, they're all in front of you. Sick. And you're like, you kind of just step out and you're like, whoa. And it's like, and they're sellout every game. Like, and like when I played at Nodak, I played for Wisco. So like that was like a big rivalry. Mm-hmm. And so it was fucking packed. And then like, I remember I took a penalty there. And they're like through the thing. They're like, yeah, like Rock, like how's Joanne doing? And I'm like, my mom? Like, what the fuck? Like they like do their research on like every player. Like they're legit. It's sick there. Awesome. But honestly, there's so many sick atmospheres in college. Like Penn State was unbelievable.
Yeah.
My wife went to
Minnesota. How was that?
I was gonna say Minnesota's she went to Minnesota, hey? That's a sick school, man.
Yeah.
I love that campus, but Mariucci's awesome. Yeah, that's Minnesota. And again, I played at Wisconsin, and that's their rivals, the border battle rivalry. Yeah. So like sell out every game. Mariucci's crazy because it's so high.
Mm-hmm. Straight up, right?
It's straight up. And it's I don't even know if they have bowls. They just have like boom. Mm-hmm. But all the Big Ten's cool. Like Penn State was unreal too. The worst is Ohio State.
Okay.
Worst is by far. And then...
the Sandusky section at Penn State would be pretty intimidating.
What is that? Just like a back corner with like no
do
light.
You know?
Yeah.
Pro. I mean, that's the tough part about playing in the minors in North America is like you don't get good atmospheres. Like no one's going to like the Springfield Thunderbirds games. Mm-hmm. Like yeah, like they don't care. Like. If you ask me, like, would I rather have like $2,000 or like win the HL? I'd probably say $2,000. Like, I don't give a fuck. And then the coast, same thing. Like, you're just there to play.
Yeah.
So, like, my favorite pro atmosphere, there's two. And I was actually lucky enough to like be the home team. So, like, when I played in Slovakia, I played for a team called Nitra. And it is legitimately like, I think they're a top five fan base in hockey, like in the world. Like, when I signed there, I had teammates from Sweden being like, dude, I played against them in Champions League. It is unbelievable there. Like, best fans ever. I was like, oh, I didn't know that. Like, that's sweet. I get there, we're selling out preseason games. And this is during COVID. They didn't give a fuck. They're like, yeah, 25% capacity. They're like, yeah, no problem. 100% every game. we ended up going all the way that year. We were a game away from winning it all. And we made them like $2.5 million or euros, like on our playoff run alone or something.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one of the guys in that league, he went on a podcast and they asked him the same question. They're like, what's your favorite atmosphere? And he said, he's like, we played in this place called Nitro this year and it was insane. He's like, we were screaming to the guy next to you on the bench. And it's just a great little rink. It's like flat roof, so it's like really loud. And then like the whole fan section is like basically the whole arena, but it's like there's this one side and they have this like cat. This is the craziest shit ever. He's like the captain fan. Like he's like the guy. Like if there's chance, he's leading them and everyone like looks to him. He's always got no shirt on and he's like body paint, face paint. This is nuts though. So if they have a power play in the first or the third, so that's right in front of their thing, he brings a megaphone and he's like, ooh, and he's like taunting them. Like during the game, like they're on the power play. He's like walking more and he's like, ooh. And it's like, I'm on the bench, I'm like, is this legal? Yeah. What the fuck is this? Like, he's like, oh, like, and like, it's just like, they're cheering. It's crazy. And then like, after every game, we'd salute the fans, but after every win, especially, like we'd kneel down and we'd do the chant, and it was just, it was insane. Like it makes playing there. And then last year in Stockholm, I played in the Stockholm Derby, which is Djurgården versus AIK, and that was fucking mental. 16,000 fans, sold out, and like AIK and Djurgården are both from Stockholm, so like AIK would host one, then Djurgården would host one, and then like. When Djurgården would host, man, well, I think Spit and Chicklets posted it one time on Twitter and they're like, they do hockey differently in Sweden. Mm. It was literally my game. And I was like, it was insane. Actually, yeah, my dad was able to come to two of those. So that was cool.
Nice.
Okay. We gotta shut this down now, I think. Thank you. We'll have to have you for a part two probably. But our interviews usually go about 40 minutes and that one, like an hour and 40. So I knew that's how it would be though. I'm like, yeah, he can talk. So this will be like, I feel like we got like half the questions we probably should have asked.
But I love we had to list 100
movies. Yeah, with awesome. Five finger.
I love the five finger question.
I'll be honest. I thought the interview was over. So I'm like, oh, like I have this dumb finger thing that we can do. But it was mid interview.
No, that was sweet.
For the Bounce Back Boogie podcast, I'm Mike with Bray and Craig. Thanks for listening.
See you guys next
Thanks,
week,
boys. That was fun again. See ya.
It's hot wind hits my skin. I begin and take a breath.